We'll judge our pace as we see the arrivals in terms of substantive matters. Let me call the roll. Commissioner Harriman?
Present.
Commissioner Ward?
Here.
Commissioner Hansen? Has not arrived yet. Commissioner Gusakuma has also not arrived yet. Is there public comment on matters appearing or not appearing on the agenda that are within the jurisdiction of the Ethics Commission? Seeing none, I may repeat this later when others are with us, but I would like to mention that since our last meeting, and actually just very recently, a former commissioner and employee of the commission, Joe Lynn, passed away, and we wanted to note his service in both capacities. On the record, he was frequently with us at this point to share his thoughts on the many matters appearing before the commission, and we appreciate the service of everyone who has made him or herself available to do the work of the commission, and respect his commitment to ethics at the highest standards for the city and county. So I hope you'll join me in sharing our sorrow at his recent passing.
Thank you for saying something on behalf of all of us.
Certainly. We will now move to the net file contract renewal. We have a memo before us summarizing the contract for the electronic filing system and a staff recommendation that we endorse the proposal that contracting out, as described here, is the most effective way to provide the electronic filing system. Commissioners, do you have any questions or comments on the staff summary update and recommendation?
I don't. And I move that we renew the contract for the electronic filing system.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Okay. We welcome Commissioner Gusakuma. The record will show that she has just
great
made her appearance. Thank you. We appreciate it. We've just begun consideration of the electronic filing system, and a motion has been made and seconded that we accept the staff recommendation. Let me just give you a moment if you've got any questions or comments. I'm just doing commission discussion in case she had something she wanted to say first. Nope? Okay. With that, is there any public comment on this recommendation? Thank you. No. With that, we will vote. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you very much. The next item is consideration of possible regulations to implement the lobbying ordinance. As you recall, we amended the lobbying ordinance. Those amendments were recently signed into law and will take effect on January 1st. We now have before us recommendations regarding the regulations to implement those changes in the ordinance. Let's see. And the way this one is structured, we have several decision points, each with a staff recommendation. I'll take this group separately and in each case start with commissioner comments, a motion, and public comment. Decision point number one.
I move that we adopt decision points 1 and 3, both of which involve deleting redundant regulations. Decision point 1 was regulation 2.100A-1, and decision point 3 was deleting 2.160C-1.
I'm sorry, Commissioner. I think there's a typo in decision point 1 as described in your memo. I think it should refer to regulation 2.110A1, not 2.100A1.
You're correct. The decision point and the discussion immediately preceding don't match.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
So with that correction, I bring the motion to delete both of those regulations.
Okay. Public comment? All in favor of adopting decision points 1 and 3?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. Let's go back then to decision point two. I'm sorry, I thought Commissioner Ward, the recording secretary, would just like to know whether you voted on that item.
Yeah, you didn't hear me?
You'll know when he disapproves. Or has a far better idea. Decision point two.
Okay, I move that we adopt decision point two.
Second?
Just as a point of clarification, we're only talking about a holiday or a weekend. We're not talking about an accumulation of holidays or weekends.
That is absolutely right. Would one of you like to second?
I'll second.
Public comment?
It was already second. Right? No?
Oh. No, there was a question.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, so the motion's been made and seconded that we adopt decision point number two, and there was no public comment. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. We're on decision point four, which takes us into the proposed new regulations. Any questions or comments by the commissioners? There's one very narrow more drama about the seating tonight. I think there's a word missing or added, just not this part of the recommendation itself, but in the paragraph that begins to avoid any confusion, next to last sentence, provides an example, Board of Supervisors, regarding either a universal health care proposal or some such, or the A should come out.
Yes.
There's just some
tracking
there.
You're right.
Any other comments or questions on number four?
Dory.
I had a little bit of a concern. I agree with it, the thought behind it and concept. But when I look at the proposed regulation, and it talks about, you know, communicating with the city officer to influence a decision regarding whatever, legislative, administrative matter, other than the working conditions, I wondered if that included a contact about budget negotiations. And the first thing that popped into my mind was the more recent thing with, I don't know if it was the healthcare workers, and the supervisors had decided that they were going to try to save these jobs for, I think, through the end of the year or something. And then the mayor said he wasn't going to spend the money anyway. But and I wondered if the union workers or the union folks were contacting, let's say, Supervisor Chu to get him to vote to, you know, give money back or to allocate money to keep these jobs. That's not really an MOU or collective bargaining agreement issue per se, so I don't know where we come down on that. I don't know if that should constitute a contact or not, but I wanted to sort of flesh that out a little bit, because to me it wasn't clear based on the way this proposed regulation is written, and I do think it's a policy matter, but I just wanted us to talk about that a little bit more. So could someone, maybe someone from staff or...
I mean, as I read the regulation before you tonight, I think what you describe would constitute a contact.
Would constitute.
Yeah. Right. So what, it's a question of whether you feel, as a policy matter, that's appropriate or not. But I would note, however, that one of the changes we did make when we went through the lobbyist ordinance was to include labor union explicitly as a person. And sort of as that evolved and as that's implemented the ordinance, I mean, I don't think the regulation departs very far from what the ordinance itself provides. So if you really, really want to revisit that issue, we might have to, that may require a change in the ordinance as well.
Could you just, for the record, take us the next step? And if it is a contact, it's not that it's prohibited. It's that it has to be recorded.
Right, it's just a question about... Right, I'm sorry.
Handled a different way.
Right, so a contact basically serves two purposes. It can qualify you as a lobbyist in the first instance, and it can also be something that needs to be reported. So those are that's sort of the significance of the contact.
Thank you. I'd like to note for the record that Commissioner Hansen has joined us. And my apologies for being late.
We understand there were external circumstances, and we appreciate you getting here and not minding that we got started. We're on decision point four under the lobbyist ordinance regulations. Commissioner Guzikuma, did you want to follow up on that, or is that answer?
I think that answers my question. I think that answers my question.
Any other questions or comments on decision point four?
I will move that we adopt decision point four, the proposed regulation 2.104D1Q-1.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Public comment on this item? Hearing none. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Thank you. Decision point five. Discussion?
I just had a question about this. Is there any other, I mean, is this done anywhere else in the state, is my question.
The listing and photograph?
The photograph.
Yeah, in Sacramento requires lobbyists to provide their mugshots. Yes.
Is that city of Sacramento or state government?
It's the state of,
State of California.
Yes. State of California.
Yes. Well, there's precedent for you.
Oh, yeah, that's what it says.
Tiny point, does a professional quality... I just want to be sure that it can be satisfied without having to go to a professional photographer. And is there some other expression like, you know, clear and businesslike or some other language that
passport
would not make
quality.
You... That's the lowest of the low. I don't know if others feel a concern, but I don't want us to burden lobbyists with feeling that they have to get a movie star quality photograph, but we do want something that's business-like. Does anybody else think that's a change worth making in the proposal, and would that defeat our notice requirements?
I think the phrase professional quality
is
doesn't require
sufficient.
A professional photograph.
Okay.
It's...
I'm happy to leave that. If the staff gets inquiries, perhaps you could respond in a way consistent with my suggestion.
Yeah, I guess I worry that that's vague, professional quality.
So wouldn't we, isn't one way to resolve it by requiring, for instance, what the passport office requires? And that has to do more with size. If you create a standard size that...
Right.
You know, you can go to a passport office, not a passport office, but the people who do the photographs for passports.
Right. Well, and you know,
come up with a certain...
The head and shoulders may be sufficient unless we see that there's a problem in what we're getting. I don't know whether that would do it, would mean what you're saying.
Because
we're
going
to control the
shot.
Size.
It covers one of those panels.
Well, but if it's digital, they're going to size the staff... It'll be sized on the site. I don't want to make it overly complicated. I just don't want it to be more difficult for the lobby, for the people we deal with, than it needs to be.
Just not thinking of a good word to replace professional.
Clearly readily, you know.
Is there a photographic equivalent of the word legible?
That's
photoball. Right. Clear and identifiable.
Can we say must be recent and of clear focus?
Yeah.
Charles nodded.
How about professional like quality?
What do we think the problem is? Do we think that they're going to take a picture in a mask?
No, it's that they will feel that they have to go to a photographer to get a formal portrait and spend money to do it when we'd be perfectly satisfied with
so
a
what about with professional hyphen like professional like quality?
Okay.
Fine. Okay. Any other discussion of decision point five? I don't think we can get more precise than that. Do I hear a motion?
I move that we adopt decision point five and change the language of professional quality to professional-like quality.
Second. Public comment?
For the record, Charlie Marsteller, you might, if the state has this requirement, you might look and see if they have standards for that, to clarify that qualification or adjective. So that's just a thought. They might have something more formal because it's more maybe universal there than it is here, in Sacramento, for instance. And tell Joe Lobbyist that he takes a good picture. I assume that's somebody I know. Right? Marvin? Is that not Marvin?
No.
Oh, no. Well, I take it back then.
Stephen Massey, IT officer. The state requirement is a black and white headshot, and so we'd prefer a color one for the web. So we wouldn't want to follow the state's...
Do you know if they have language on this piece of it?
I'm sorry?
Do you know if they have language on that aspect of it?
The professional... I don't recall.
Okay. Yeah. I think this is fine.
Yeah.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. Decision point six, discussion.
I'll move to adopt that.
Second.
Public comment?
I just wanted to thank the commission for bringing this to fruition because I remembered getting the funding for online filings by lobbyists and political consultants in, I believe, the FY99 budget. I remember Mr. Amiano picking that one up, so we owe him a thanks, too. But we finally got it. Thank you.
All in favor of the motion to adopt decision point six?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Seven. This relates to online filing. Any discussion? Do I hear a motion?
I move that we adopt decision point seven.
Second.
Public comment? For seven. Thank you. His comment was
in the minutes, you mean?
Yeah. Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay.
If I can ask the commissioners to go back to decision point four, I just realized that there's a typo. It is regulation 2.105D1Q-1.
Instead of 2.104.
Yes. Thank you.
Ah, correct. It's right in the first line, but not in the subsequent reference. Thank you. Thank you for that correction. Okay. The next item is consideration of possible regulations to implement CFRO. This is a set with a large number of decision points, and we propose to address the technical amendments all as a group, and then the items related to 3B and 11B separately. Is that satisfactory to? Thank you very much, Mr. Massey. Is that satisfactory procedurally?
Sure.
Commissioner Hansen? Where there's some technical amendments.
I do have a couple of questions that I think, would fall under the technical.
Would it be okay if we address your questions about the technical ones, and then if we then decide to narrow how we vote on them, we can, but perhaps it'll be resolved and we can still address the whole package. So let's take questions about any of the technical amendments first. Would that be okay? Questions or comments?
It is. And let me ask, are you considering technical, are you considering the non-technical, anything that comes up in the decision points?
3B.
Is that correct?
The non-technical at 3B and 11B.
Was that your question?
Yes. So you're proposing that we take everything excepting
3B
and 11B together, then I do have questions about the technical points.
Okay, mm-hmm. Go ahead.
All right. Let's see, my first question is with regard to 1.1047. Let's see if I can do
this. Can you tell us which decision point that goes
to? That would be, that comes up in, it's on page one of the memo is what I'm looking at, and it comes up in decision point one.
Okay.
And then I would refer us to page three of the proposed changes.
Okay, so your first reference was to the full document of the proposed changes and the decision point that appears on page three.
Is that an appropriate way to do this?
Yeah, that's fine.
Try to make this as simple as possible. Yeah. So 1.104-7 is a definition of member communication. So my question is that term, I believe, is still used in the statute, but we are now taking out the definition. So my question is, if we're still referring to that term, should we not have the definition?
It's in 1.1.
Right
here? The reason for the deletion is that it's in there twice. So if you look at 1.104T, there's the definition of member communication. It says so in the memo.
Okay. So did I miss that explanation? So we're okay on that?
Yeah.
Where do we have that explanation?
On page
number
two, middle of the page.
I'm sorry. That's exactly right. Okay. Got it. Thank you. So hopefully that's correct. And my next question, which is 1.108-3 on page 3 of the memo, transfer funds to campaign contingency account. I believe we need a definition of campaign contingency.
We're all looking.
Did not see one.
Which part of 1.108 are you referring to?
So
1.108(3)
on page 8 of the full document.
Say it again. I'm sorry. What page?
Page 8.
Are you looking at the order?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you look under 1.108(b)(1). It describes the campaign contingency account, and so do the further subsections as well.
Is this on page 5?
Page 8.
Page 8 of the ordinance.
On the actual code, not the
right. I'm looking at the code.
Not the proposed changes.
So it's not actually a defined term in 1.104, which is where a lot of the terms are described, but the concept and sort of operation is described in 1.108(b).
Is there a reason why we don't have a definition? It seems to me, for clarity's sake, that would be useful.
In the last election, it was not an issue we didn't hear a lot of questions about it. We just kind of explained it in our workshops what it was, but we didn't get a whole lot of questions about it.
Uh-huh.
It appears that... Is this true that there's not a definition of a campaign trust account either, that they're both described functionally in 108?
Yeah, that's how they're described. And they're also very interrelated concepts as well.
Right.
The definition would be an account that operates the way it's described in 108.
Well, we probably have to refer to that section, which may or may not be helpful.
Well, my next question was about the trust account, because I don't want people to get confused between those. I do think that we certainly refer to it I was looking for a specific definition because I figured if people were confused, they'd go to the definition section. If you didn't get a lot of questions about it last campaign season, then maybe it's not an issue.
Why don't we see when there are public comment? Would that be helpful?
Mm-hmm.
But it seems the fact that they're both together in 108 and that you can see one is this for that purpose and another is for another purpose, adjacent to each other, might address it.
Okay, my next question is, this comes up for decision point 9, so I'm looking at the memo page 5, and just two paragraphs before the bar of decision point 5, we refer to the fact that the CFRA no longer requires the Department of Election to publish a notice of whether a candidate has accepted or declined to accept voluntary expenditure sharing. We say in this language in the memo that we will maintain on our website a list of candidates who have accepted the voluntary expenditure ceiling, but in the language which is on page I'm looking at the proposed changes, so that's page 19. And I don't see that we say that we're listed on our website. So I'm wondering if we can add that. We do say in 1.128-1.
Actually, if I can.
Yes?
If you look at page 19 of the ordinance itself, okay. 1.128C, it says the Ethics Commission shall maintain on its website a list of candidates who have accepted the voluntary expenditure ceiling, etc.
Thank you. Okay, so now let me go just go back to where I was looking that I did not see that. So I was looking at 1.128C, the new C. Okay, sorry, I'm confused because I'm looking at the amendments. I'm looking at the proposed changes, and I see C reading policy of the commission. The Ethics Commission encourages all candidates. Don't say anything about the website. Then I go back to 1.128C.
Yeah. Generally speaking, an ordinance is the controlling law. So 1.128C says the Ethics Commission must do this. So we must do this. Regulations clarify.
You're right. I'm sorry. So if it's already there, we don't need to put it in regulations.
Exactly.
I apologize. Okay. That's great. Thank you. I believe my other comments are with regard to decision points 3B and 11B. Let me see. I think I have one other question.
And while you're looking, I have one. Does anybody else have questions about the items other than 3 and 11? Okay. Commissioner Hanson, may I ask Commissioner Guzman?
Yes.
Go ahead while you look.
Thank you.
What is your...
My question is very simple, I think, hopefully. It had to do with page 3, section 1.108. It's just that section where it says you're not requiring the folks to provide their bank account number and branch identification because state law already requires it. And so does that information actually appear on any of the forms that are filed with the commission?
Yes, yes.
Okay, yeah. So there's a space for it.
Exactly.
Or a slot.
Correct.
Or whatever. Okay, thanks.
I do have a couple more, I'm sorry. A question about use of public funds for equipment. and maybe it's faster to just point me to the correct language, but I was looking at 1.148.1, and the language is deleted with regard to equipment purchased. So what happens now with equipment purchased with publicly financed dollars? Is that, would that be considered surplus funds? How do we deal with it?
Actually, I think that, that may be a good question. The reason the staff had recommended that the commission delete that in 1.148 was that in the few cycles that we've had publicly financed candidates, we've never had anybody turn in any equipment purchase with public funds. Yeah, I think many campaigns rent their equipment instead of purchase them.
Most campaigns rent equipment rather than purchase it. It's cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, from an accounting point of view, there's probably never going to be an occasion where a campaign spends more on equipment than they've raised total value of private funds. And just in terms of accounting, all they have to do is say, we only use the public funds for qualified purposes. We used our privately raised funds for equipment. I mean, it's so it becomes an unenforceable provision.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, if it hasn't been an issue in the past, I'll presume it's not going to be an issue. I hope it won't be. Okay. Okay, on decision point 14, I had a question regarding the language that we have on regulation 1.143-2. Although it appears in other places as well, and this is regarding the lifting of the individual expenditure ceiling. So the language refers to the sum of the highest total supportive funds of a candidate and the total opposition funds. And I'm wondering if we need to we use the term and, so the highest, so total supportive funds of any candidate and the total opposition. And it seems to me that sometimes it could be one or the other. So I wonder if it makes sense to say and or instead of and throughout the various places where that appears.
Yeah, just to clarify on the individual expenditure ceilings, it should always be an and statement, because what you look at for whether you need to adjust the ceiling or is not is always a sum of those two different figures. So in the regulation, it should be and, just because that's how the calculation must be carried out. Does that help?
So if there's none of one of those things, it still should be and.
Right. I guess you would just be adding zero,
mm-hmm.
which wouldn't lead you anywhere else. And hopefully some of the examples following that
mm-hmm.
help illustrate, because it is a can be a difficult concept at first.
Right.
For okay. for people out there.
All right. Questions about the examples. I wonder if we will talk about those, actually, though, when we get to the more substantive discussions of 3B and 11B. So I can stop there.
And I have one question related to 1.142-3B, the question about supporting material to demonstrate that the contributor is a San Francisco resident. There's a language change from demonstrating that to providing evidence of, and I would like to know how the staff thinks those would be applied, and whether it's clear enough to people that, at least as I read it, that this is evidence in support of residence, but not proof if there is information in another direction, or if they, it is possible to be a resident of a place other than San Francisco, but have a bank account here with an address here. And I just wonder whether we are clear enough about what the effect of providing this information will be.
Where are you?
The language is on page 25 of the proposed regulations. It used to say the supporting material shall demonstrate evidence of each contributor's primary residence. And it now says shall demonstrate that the contributor is a resident, San Francisco resident. I'm fine that, as far as that goes, by providing evidence of any of the following. And it seemed to me that although we don't say proof or is true anymore, isn't it possible that I could provide evidence of some of these and still not be a resident? Right. So does this make people think that if they simply give you this information that it has demonstrated that the contributor is a San Francisco resident? I have no problem with seeking this information. I just think it stands for, acts as though the person has accomplished or established residency when they haven't. Did you think this was...
Just to clarify the question,
yeah.
Is there a concern that this is too permissive and that it's too maybe too easy to approve residency?
In a sense, or put another way, these things do not prove residency. They might, but whether it's that they should may create a rebuttable presumption, or that if there's evidence that a person has to assert that they are residents and that this is proof of that, and then that has to be accurate, that they are residents. I'm not sure how to solve the problem because I don't know how people have understood it, and I wanted to hear why you thought this was better than the language that's here. But it just seems to me that it sounds like if you just give me one of these, then you have proven that you are a resident, and that's not right.
But that's how it works, isn't it? If you write a personal check with your address on it and it's a San Francisco address, that's it. That's presumptive proof. And whether it has the new language or the old language, it's just the way it's been done for someone who's making a contribution.
And and our standard is that's adequate for these purposes, even if that if the person has done that, then the candidate is allowed and his or her.
Yeah, we're not making a candidate go behind every representation. I mean, it's
okay. I mean, that may be the answer. I was just puzzled because these do not prove, but our standard maybe it's enough for the candidate to rely on if any of these is true.
Yeah. With the resources we have, there's only so much we can do.
Well, is it that we do or that the candidate does?
Well, the candidate has to provide something like this. Usually, it's just the check has a printed address on it. So there's someone doing banking in the city. It's presumptive that they're telling the truth about living here, or provides a copy of a driver's license.
Okay.
When we had the whole Chicken John Rinaldi fiasco, you know, he had numerous people who couldn't do even any of these things. So we kind of, over the course of several elections, have said, you know, people come to us, well, I don't have a driver's license, I don't have whatever.
Okay. I think that that actually answers my question. We're not looking for the truth of someone being a resident. It's not the standard, for example, for the candidate, him or herself.
Right.
It's whether this is sufficient to accept the contribution.
Right.
Okay. Thank you. That answers my question. Anyone? I'm sure.
The question I have about some of the examples, I realize, is decision point 14, regulation 1.1432. Do you want to take those now, or address them later.
Let's take them now.
Okay.
They go with this.
Okay.
Set.
So on proposed, on their proposed changes, again, it's regulation 1.143-2, and it's page 29. First example. I just found this a bit confusing, so I'd like to just suggest some additional language towards the bottom of that example. So the maybe the next to last sentence, the executive director will raise the individual expenditure ceilings. The next sentence, because Alvin's supportive funds do not exceed Beatrice's individual expenditure ceiling, I would suggest inserting of $143,000 by at least $10,000. The executive director will not raise the $143,000 individual expenditure ceiling of Beatrice. I think that would make it clear. I'm going to give you my other suggestion, kind of similar. It's the third example, the last line. Yes.
I just wanted to make sure the staff, I didn't see any problems with that language, but I wanted to make sure the staff didn't see any problems with it before you go on to the next one.
So, I'm sorry. So, you're inserting of $143,000 by at least $10,000, the executive director will not raise. Do we keep the 143 in there, or do we not do that?
Yes,
so we
I would keep it all. I would just insert the 143,000.
Okay.
Ceiling of 143,000. I know it sounds a little redundant, but I thought it was confusing when I read it.
I don't have a problem with that.
The other?
The other suggestion I would have is the third example. The last sentence, the executive director will raise the individual expenditure ceilings. The executive director will raise the individual expenditure ceiling of Barry to, et cetera. I thought, again, we should just, maybe in parentheses, list that this is done in the increments that it's done in. So it's clear why this is being raised by 100,000. So just, again, to repeat, 100,000 increments. So we could say the executive director will raise the individual expenditure ceilings, a ceiling in 100,000 increments to 1,575,000. Or insert it wherever you like. Not substantial.
Fine.
Just
okay.
Helps to clarify. Thank you. Page 30 at the top, an example, second line, I think we should capitalize district and district 2. And down at the bottom of that page, 30, last example, three lines in, there should be a space between 1,575,000 and because. And another space before the last line, beginning the executive director. And that's it for my questions. I just had a comment that I would like us just to, I just would like to, I don't think there's anything we can do about it now because we've made our decision, but it's very clear from reading these changes that those who accept public finance will always be behind people who don't. So in every example, in every explanation, the publicly financed candidate is always behind. It may be that at some point that will change, but it appears from this read not to be a benefit to accept public dollars because you're always going to be somewhat behind. So you get your ceiling raised, which is progress, but you don't get it raised to what the person who's blown the limit has spent. So I think that's, you know, it's just a concern. It seems like not an incentive to take public financing and not something that we want to necessarily put out to the public as a positive message about publicly financed campaigns.
It goes with the territory. Part of the reason we have public financing is to reduce the amount people spend, and without a mandatory program.
Right.
No.
I mean, we could consider doing something like raising the 10,000, providing the 10,000 as soon as the non-publicly financed candidate went over. That would immediately balance it out. But it's not anything that we can take on now.
We're going to spend the rest of eternity trying to create a level playing field.
Thank you for that time. I appreciate it.
No, thank you for the careful read. We are ready for a motion on all of the items other than 3B and 11B, if that's the end of the question.
I'm going to move that we adopt all of the decision points except 3B and 11B. And I also move that we adopt the word changes to the examples that Commissioner Hansen has pointed out.
Second?
Second.
Public comment on this set? Thank you.
I hope I can remember everything. I did wonder whether we have a definition that's handy for the public on what is a resident of the city. And I assume that the commission is happy to provide that definition to a member of the public. But it just occurred to me that I know there's a lot of debate on what does constitute residency, and the public may not be as clear on this as you may think. And I think the concerns or questions that were raised were correct, that they may actually score themselves based on one of those line items and then figure that they've obligated or fulfilled their obligation under the law, and that may or may not be true. But it certainly would be important for our purposes to make it as public, the public is aware of that issue as possible, and also on our enforcement. On a shift from the voter information pamphlet to the online, just remember that those are really two different audiences, I think. A lot of people do read the voter information pamphlet, particularly as it regards the sections on candidates. They want to find out who these people are, and they want to look at their options, and they want to read through their qualifications. They may not get through all those ballot questions or all the pros and cons on those, but they generally do look at candidates. But they may not go to the web and look up on the ethics homepage the information that we're going to be deleting out of the VIP. So I just wanted to make sure that the commission was aware of the fact that you really have two different target audiences. Obviously, the VIP, the homepage is very useful for political junkies, for the press, provides ready access, reliable information 99% of the time, as opposed to the VIP, which is an out-of-date publication in some cases. So I just wanted to point out that we're talking about something that's synonymous. And I think I forgot my last point, but it's not urgent. Thanks.
Okay. I'm going to make a comment and leave it to the staff to decide if they want to do anything with it now or in the future. But I mentioned to Mr. St. Croix that there are a large number of names used in the examples, and I'm not sure of the best way to describe it, but they are extremely traditional and do not create any kind of signal about the diversity of San Francisco or its possible candidates. There are some backgrounds for which these would be very familiar names, of a wide variety, but there are some that would signal that nobody with a Hispanic first name doesn't speak the last name has ever appeared in any of our examples. And I certainly do not expect us to select new names tonight. Maybe we would be willing to let the staff substitute equally simple names in clear uses, but somehow I think the Joan, John, Alice, Bob, James, Dave was a little narrow. Is that okay with you?
We're happy to do that. I will start with these documents. When you sent me your message, I thought you were talking about the totality of all of our documents. And I was
which
like,
I
yikes.
No, I don't recall,
I didn't know you were
being
specific to tonight's business at hand, so.
I would be perfectly happy if just as you do new ones, somebody keeps that in mind and
okay.
A little more variety.
Sure.
Yeah. So. But would not preclude her from running. We just want to be clear that having your name in an example does not preclude you from running.
Maybe we can just do a change and select, substitute the name Emmy every time the name Jane appears or something.
That would definitely address my concern. We have a motion on the floor, and we've taken public comment. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Now let's go back to 3D. 3B or D? So. So the item is decision point 3B, which appears on page 3. Questions or discussion, commissioners? Can't tell whether there are no questions or whether you're looking for your questions. So give everybody another minute.
Second. Still seconded.
Any comment? Public comment on that item? Okay. Motion's been made and seconded. All in favor of decision point 3B?
Aye.
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 Thank you. And the other item is 11B. Which is on page 6.
Question, and that is on proposed changes, page 21, the new language refers to the candidate who accepted the voluntary expenditure ceiling. I wonder if it's better to refer to the candidate or to refer to a candidate rather than the candidate, as there may be more than one candidate. And we use A, I believe, in subsequent language in one of the examples. And on page 21 at the very bottom, the
next to last line?
Next to last line, yeah.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? Okay. That change work for people? Do I hear a motion about decision point 11B?
I move that we adopt decision point 11B.
With Commissioner Hansen's change?
With Commissioner Hansen's change and with the recommendation that the chair has made on the names and the examples.
Okay. Public comment? On the motion, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
With that, we have completed as well the proposed amendments to the CFRO regulations. We thank the staff for the extensive work on these. Appreciate that a great deal. We're now on item 6 on the agenda, budget discussion, Mr. St. Croix.
Okay. as you all know, we find ourselves kind of in the nearly identical situation as a year ago. The city is facing a $550 million budget shortfall. We've been instructed to make a 20% cut in our proposed budget and submit a 10% contingency, which would really be extraordinary difficulty for us. So the question that I raise is the same one I put before you last year, is how do we maintain the independence of the commission as an independent agency, yet at the same time realistically acknowledge that there aren't any city agencies that can avoid the pressures of the budget crisis. So my solution is the exact same that I proposed and you adopted last year, which is to respectfully decline to submit the cuts, to not ask for increases, even though we all believe we need more staffing and resources, as a way to sort of split the difference. I've discussed this with the mayor's office. They understand that we do this and have done it with a sense of respect, but also as a way to at least for the commission to acknowledge to the public that we do feel some independence from the rest of the city based on the orientation of our mission. So ultimately what we would ask for in our budget request is this year's budget before the mid-year cuts that we acceded to a couple of weeks ago. And I just want to mention briefly that we did agree to the mid-year cuts proposed based on shortfalls in this year's budget. Those were achieved primarily because, as you know, we lost an investigator in August, Paul Solis. We have not replaced him. We will not replace him this fiscal year. We had two accountants leave, one in August and one in November. Auditors, excuse me, not accountants. I have hired replacement for both of those, both of whom will start on January 4th. But then we have vacancies in those two positions from August on for one and November on from the other. We needed to save an additional about $15,000. We took most of that out of court reporting and supply budgets, but that's how we met the 85. So I think that the combination of in good faith meeting our mid-year cut as we did last year, and then respectfully submitting a budget that's sort of halfway between what the mayor's office proposes and what we would want is the sensible way to go. Ultimately, at the end of all of the whistling and shouting last year, the commission was held relatively harmless. I would certainly hope that the mayor and the board would do that this year. Part of what I think saved us from heavier cuts was the ability of the city to borrow from the public finance fund, which we have written commitments to replace on an as-needed basis. There's a little over $4 million in the public finance fund for 2010, which will be more than sufficient. What's left over from that and the money repaid by the city will have to pay for the mayoral election for 2011. So having considered all of that, this is the recommendation that I make.
Thank you.
Any discussion or comments? Commissioner Hanson?
Thank you. I appreciate that strategy. I think it's appropriate, and it worked well for us, frankly, last year. I just don't see how we would do it any other way, so I appreciate that approach. I have two questions. One is with regard to the $85,000 mid-year cut. It sounds like you've handled it and have acceded to it, so we're there. But I am concerned about the loss of an investigator, and as I have said before, I would like our investigative team to be even more robust and growing further, and now it seems that we've taken a serious step back with no hope of even getting back to where we were, because if we're holding the line and not making cuts, when will we ever make up for that loss of that position, let alone adding more? So do you have a plan for how to do that? What's your response?
The funding request, as I propose it, includes that position. So we met the $85 cut for this year, but our request for next year is before the $85,000 cut.
We'd be able to come back to that straight.
So we would hire someone in July to fill that position again.
And what is your plan for increasing the number of investigators? Because did we not have a plan to increase as opposed to just hold the line at the current, or or what was current investigator?
Yeah. But keeping in mind, we also lost a clerical staffer, so we had to, we lost the front desk person. We transferred the clerical person from the investigative staff to the front desk. So we're missing two people from the investigative department. So yes, the eventual plan is to build those back up again, whether we hire another investigator first or go back and get another assistant first is a question we'll answer when there's money. But we would definitely go back to having the additional investigator at the beginning of the next fiscal year.
But then, I'm not making myself clear, how do we get to the point of increasing, because we had plans to
right.
add investigators, so well. Not just trying to replace.
Right. When there's more money.
I agree.
Right.
I agree.
Yes.
Well, I think for me, the conversation needs to be if we're just never going to be able to talk about increasing or holding to our five-year plan, to go back and look at that plan and maybe deconstruct it. And if we decide that it's important to increase the investigative team, which we had decided at some point, maybe the only way to do that is to decrease other staffers.
Right.
I don't know what that would look like, but we need to have that discussion, I think.
And I understand that. Part of our historical problem is the campaign finance staff works based on a bunch of statutory deadlines, and to a great degree, so does the auditing public finance staff. Stuff that just has to be done by certain dates or within certain deadlines, whereas the investigative enforcement people don't have those. We've always, and we continue to make sure we can meet our legal obligations first and then attend to. So that's one of the reasons that investigations have been historically weak. And I had to replace those two auditors. We absolutely need them. The third auditor does all our budget stuff, and there's a lot of work involved in that. And with the budget shortfall and stuff, they're combing through stuff all the time. So he's always getting yanked out of the office. You know, and it's fine because there's not a lot left to examine with us. But so the number of audits we have been able to do is down, and I think that's a problem because auditing is a sharp enforcement tool itself. It's how we find most of the problems, I think. Plus, the public finance program is actually getting more popular, especially in a year like this when it's going to be a number of open seats, and then we're going to have our first real run-through with the mayoral program the year after that. So we need those people, because I think there's going to be five public finance candidates in the mayoral election. We're talking a lot of money.
I think your point is well taken that we should look at these over time. It's our job to set the priorities, not the staffing details, but it's a fair question about where our efforts ought to be.
Yeah.
But also a very useful reminder about what our
yeah.
statutory obligations are and what's coming down the pike, what is going to happen now at a level of
But I'm glad you asked. It's a chance for me to share my thinking mm-hmm. with you. And, you know, we're looking on the horizon. There's...
Do we need any action on this item? Or
yes.
We need to adopt your proposal?
Mm-hmm.
And I move that we adopt the budget proposal for fiscal year 2010-11.
And I had a second question before we do that.
Okay. Did you?
Yes.
But yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
My second question was, or my second request was that we consider, albeit unpopular, to even ask that we maintain our current budget. I have asked that we consider the possibility of televising these meetings, which I think there's some support for in the city, and it's a tiny amount of money. I understand that any amount of money right now is not tiny, but it would only be $24,000 to televise all of our meetings on a monthly basis. $24,000. That's the estimate I've been given.
No.
So unless you have a different estimate.
It strikes me that that the commission should have a conversation about whether we want to do it before we try and add it to a budget that
sure.
we need to submit at this point. And we do know that you've suggested that we look into it, especially where we have as much factual difference about what the cost would be. I think we've said we will put it on the agenda to talk about at a meeting. So
I think the problem, if we don't have the conversation now, then we submit the budget as it is, and when do we get to have the conversation about adding anything to the budget? It's too late at that point.
Well, it would be for this cycle where there's been, I mean, we
can see whether we have the votes for the motion, but the motion is to adopt the budget with these expenses included. So it, you're correct, it would not be possible in this cycle unless we wanted to decided we wanted to do it and saw substantial reprogramming possibilities. Any other questions or comments on the budget from the commissioners? Then we have a motion on the floor, public comment.
In January, you bring the budget back, do you not? And we look at it again one more time? No. Okay. I'm skipping a beat here. What happens in January? You submit it. Yes. Okay.
No, sometimes we haven't been able to decide in December, and then we...
And it slipped.
Yeah.
Okay, that's also a factor. And I'm looking at the... I have some medication for that if you need something. It's very helpful. Okay. I understand there's, from your executive director's report, that there's 11 pending complaints. And does that represent the total universe of complaints before the enforcement staff at this time?
At the moment.
That's pretty decent, that ratio. I assume you still have your one investigator, maybe two?
Three.
And that, I thought maybe one was a clerk.
Clerk's
no, they're full investigators. Wow. Well, we stand ready for mayoral public financing and supervisorial public financing, too, because I'm sure there'll be some complaints over that. And you're right about the requirements to proactively audit publicly financed dollars. That's that was something that we emphasized to the voters, so I wanted to make that clear, too, for the record.
Any other public comment? Otherwise, we have a motion made and seconded to approve the recommendation for the budget submission. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Thank you. With that, we will go into closed session.
Yes.
I need a motion to go into closed session.
I move that
please.
We go into closed session.
Second.
Public comment? Do we public comment on that motion? The departures are eloquent.
We're going to do
thank
that.
You very much. Do we have an estimate about, do you want an estimate about time or are you have sufficient?
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays, Charlie.
Yeah, you guys have
a
good one.
Thank you. You too.
Yeah. Do you have a...
Just need, oh, yes. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Thank you. Thank you. We're going back into open session. Do you have a motion to make, Commissioner Harriman?
I'll move that we find that it's in the best interest of the public not to disclose our closed session deliberations.
Second? Second?
Oh, second. Sorry. I didn't hear the question mark.
Thank you. Sorry. Public comment? No public. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. The next item of business is to review the minutes of the regular meeting of November 9th. Does anybody have any corrections or questions to the November 9th minutes? Do I hear a motion to approve the minutes as presented? Second. No public available to comment. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you very much. Okay. With that, we invite your report, Mr. Executive Director.
I actually don't have any highlights this month, so I'll just take questions.
Okay. Any questions?
I don't have a question, just a comment that I'm still interested in receiving feedback about my previous questions about the numbers and whether we posted on our website, I didn't have a chance to look, the list of errant folks.
We're still kicking that one around.
Why would we not do that?
It
It's a question of the utility of guilt and embarrassment as a tool in this particular case.
Appropriate, I would submit, for people who, as we've heard in public testimony, people who are running for office or in office. I don't know if that will mean that we'll see the fines be paid, but I think it's certainly appropriate for the public to know what people in public office are doing and how they respect the ethics commission or not.
Can you remind us, Commissioner Hanson, at what stage you were suggesting this be posted? I'm just forgetting.
I didn't talk about stage. I just was referring to the names that were on here as folks who had not paid their fine and thought they should be listed on the website, which we have talked about numerous times.
And who are delinquent, who met the standard of delinquent.
Well, they're on this list. If they owe a fine, they're delinquent.
Yeah.
They should be on the website.
I think that's a fair suggestion. Anyone else? Okay. Items for future meetings. We have a couple that we still have pending from Commissioner Hanson that the staff director and I are looking for homes for. Are there any other items for future meetings? Thank you. I'm correct, right, that there are no members of the public with us anymore? With that, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
Move to adjourn.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you very much. Well, we beat our estimate.
We did.
What did you say?
That's 8:00.
No, he said 8:30. It wasn't my touch.